So this is promo from the Loop Troop Rockers and the David vs. Goliath label. DVSG to me has also always meant independence, the struggle of the small artist or the small person against some huge obstacles and opposition in the forms of whatever. It could be major labels or it could be governments. And I think that's what I still identify with in hip-hop.
This is Radio Freedom.
If you don't stand up for something, you'll fall for anything.
Come on! Listen!
Planet Earth, planet rap. Planet Earth, planet rap. Rap, the only segment show and station in the hip-hop world playing the hip-hop world. In the hip-hop world playing the hip-hop world. With Nico and I'm Kilwa.
This is PEPR, Planet Earth, Planet Rap, Virtual World Tour Series. Thank you for joining us. This is where we get a chance to speak to artists from all around the hip-hop world. My name is Amkelwa and I'm here with you.
Yes, I'm here also. Mikko, my name is, and it's really great to be here. I mean, this has really been a great thing that we've been doing, talking to various different artists from around the world. Some of these people that we have been supporting their music for a very long time. You know, maybe we've been listening to their music for a lot longer time than we've been playing music, and today certainly one of those people. And yeah, it's been a series, and it is a series that has sort of given us an opportunity to get a little bit deeper with some of these artists that we respect their art and enjoy it, and them as people as well.
Yes, and people we've been supporting all these years and who've been supporting us all these years, whom we've been building relationships over time. But finally, we get an opportunity to actually get to have more conversations that speak more about who the artists themselves are. And of course, this next artist, we already did an interview many years ago when he was here in Finland. And the next artist is Promo from Sweden.
Promo from Sweden. And many people also know him from as a member of a group called Loop Troop Rockers, or Loop Troop, just, you know, it can kind of like both different names that they've been going by, and he's really like a great artist for sure. But what a change of career he's been having. I mean, this is something that
Radical.
We are covering quite a bit at this particular episode that you're about to see or hear. Yeah, Promo.
Yes, he's here to tell us a little bit more about this transformation, this change that you referred to, that is, which is quite amazing and inspiring. So you'll get a chance to hear him tell you the story himself.
I'm good. I'm feeling a bit exhausted after a long day.
And then here we are bringing you in for like a Q&A after a long and exhausting day.
Yeah.
Thank you though for making the time, even though it was sort of unexpected given that you'd forgotten. But it's nice that you could make the time. It's been a while since we last saw you and so much has changed, right?
I gathered, I mean, imagine my surprise, I saw that you've become a lawyer since we last spoke. is that true? What has happened?
Yeah, that's true. I remember we did a interview in backstage in Helsinki.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the year or?
Man.
No, I don't remember, but it's probably.
I think it could have been 20.
It's probably close. It's not 10 years ago, but it's not. It's closer to 10 years ago than we would like to think.
Yeah. So that long ago, I had not started. So I started in school in 2016.
Sorry, I can tell you just quickly. It was the beautiful mistake. It was that song was brand new that time. So I don't know if you can place it on a year yourself better than I don't remember exactly the year, but.
But I don't remember which album that one is from.
It happens. You know, you've been recording many albums when this happens.
Yeah.
So in 2016, you started studying.
Yeah. I just wanted to get some different influences besides music. So I was thinking about different stuff. I applied to some kind of creative writing course. And then also law school, like, so completely different, although in some ways similar, but the writing course was maybe for half a semester, and this was for 4.5 years. So I just finished a year ago or something. Yeah, a year ago.
Yeah, 2021.
I graduated and then started working at a law firm in September. So I've been working for 5 months now.
Okay, that's amazing. How are you finding that?
It's really interesting. It's an uphill job. I mean, the firm is focusing on criminal law, and since I'm not a, well, in Swedish we say advocate.
Yeah.
And you can't become that until after 3 years of working after.
Okay, so do you have to specialize on it specifically, or is it just a time period to wait?
It's more like you have to do 3 years of legal work, so you don't really have to specialize. I guess most people do. So the law firm is specialized in criminal law, but I can't work with criminal law so much. I can't be a public defender. I could be a private defender, but for the state to pay my fee, I have to be the advocate. So I don't know how. I mean, I'm sure that in English they have some kind of certificate. And
yeah, and also different countries have slightly different ways of doing it. They have slightly different regulation around that kind of thing. But that's very interesting. That's very interesting. But you have always had this kind of like sense of justice and things like this. They've been like big themes in your music. So it's not entirely, you know, surprising.
It's not a departure from what you normally do. Social justice was a very sort of like overarching theme in your work, in music.
Yeah, and there are a lot of similarities, because what you need to do, or what I'm understanding that this work is about, is to try to tell somebody's story in a convincing way so that they could either become free or whatever it is. What I mostly do is it's so hard to find the English words for these things, but it's the kind of law where the individual is against the state. So, which is also the case in criminal law, but then you have maybe a victim on the other side as well. Well, the cases that I do is more like if somebody maybe has somebody deciding what they should do with their money, for example. They can't control their own lives because somebody else steps in and say, well, your money is being spent on this and we're helping you with this. And then a lot of these people, they want to get freed from that because they want to control their own lives. So that's the kind of cases that I could take. Or I'm doing two cases now at the same time, which is migration cases with people locked up, awaiting maybe to be sent out of Sweden. I've come to think that what I want to focus on is to fight against different forms of locking up people. Like it could be in prison, but it could also be the migration cases where people get locked up, or also the psychiatric cases, although they are very hard.
And
because,
may I ask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, may I ask? I mean, there's so much to go into with regards to your new field of work. How has this actually impacted you as a person? Has it changed your point of view of the world? How has it impacted you, this shift?
I don't know really yet. I think it will be more, maybe it's easier to see after some time, but I'm thinking that maybe I will become an even more serious person and maybe a little bit more, not numb, but saddened by the world, because as a musician you can take the negative energy and throw it out in a positive way. And it's harder here because you can use the words, but you can't use the rhythm, you can't use the creativity as much, and
the stakes are higher.
Yeah, too, that as well, because if I don't succeed, you know, somebody is a very big impact on their lives, as compared to if I make a bad show one night. I mean, everybody's gonna forget about it anyway, so.
Yeah. No, I was thinking, and of course, this is not like the main most important thing about it, but when you think about it, it's like, when you're performing on stage, I mean, well, now with the corona, it's been a little bit more difficult anyway, I guess. But when you're performing on stage, you get the feedback, like the crowd feedback. But if you were performing to an audience and they all of them were just silently listening to you and not react, it would probably be energetically quite different experience.
After a week, you get somebody writes a paper saying you failed or something.
Not good enough. Yeah. That's very interesting to me. It sounds very interesting how you sort of like bring together or you connect the dots between like maybe like writing a song or telling a story in music and then telling the story of the person that you are making the case for, and you just have to make it in a most convincing way. It makes a lot of sense when you say it, but it's not something that, you know, I would have thought about without that assistance.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that the problem is that you can't use the convincing kind of language that you really would try to use to really paint the picture. You have to stick to the words that are applicable in law. I mean, if you can't connect it to the paragraphs, then it doesn't matter to the judges or whatever.
You have to use the right terminology, even if it doesn't rhyme. You can't just take a text like, well, this sounds better, I'll say it's this instead. It's tricked.
Yeah, if you use strong words to try to cause an emotion, it's like, no, it's too much.
Yeah.
So I read that, you know, you have been in music for over 25 years, or at least 25 years. And after all that time, you decided to move into law. How have the experiences as a musician influenced the way you approach your work now?
Good question. I don't know about that. Connected to what I just said earlier, maybe I even have to try to tone down my creativity or my urge to express big feelings. So maybe just in work ethic, like, okay, I have to write this now, I have to get this done. It's so many deadlines, like you always get like, okay, I have 3 weeks to appeal this decision, or you have 3 or 4 days to make a comment to what this authority has said or whatever. I don't know how music has inspired it. Last time I wrote a song, which, I mean, I used to write songs every day when I was in music, and now it's like very rare that I write songs.
But you still write.
Yeah, it happens. And then I really feel such a different feeling in my body because I'm listening to the music and I'm following the rhythms and the melodies, and it's a completely different way of writing, or the feeling at least is so much more, is so much freer and energetic. But the way I talk about it now, it sounds like I don't want to do this law thing, but that's not the case. It's just
otherwise
hard.
You wouldn't be doing it if you didn't want to do it.
Yeah, it's really inspiring. Even though I win maybe, I feel like I win 1% of the cases.
But it's worth the 1%.
Yeah, when it happens, it feels really good. And also all the meetings with the people that I do work for is also very rewarding, even though it's also tough because they're in real tough situations, and you know, you get touched by that, and
You're making a difference. I mean, you made a difference as an artist, or you make a difference as an artist, because you were elevating the consciousness of the people that you were coming into contact with. But this is a different kind of making a difference, huh? Seeing as though it's one-on-one.
Yeah, yeah. It's more, it's, you really get, I don't know. Yeah, one-on-one. It's more of a individual meeting than the, I mean, of course, we met people individually after shows, but it was more like a few words. But this, in this process, I really get to know people. And, you know, you think, or I thought at least, that, yeah, I will be doing this case for about 3 weeks and then go on to the next. But it's not really like that. Some cases just go on, and some people stick in your mind and in your thoughts. So
the work lives with you. It stays with you.
When you were making this change, I mean, it's not like you have left the music, making music entirely. You said that you occasionally write something, but was it more like, was not necessarily music as art, but music as work, as the business side of it? Was it more that the law was pulling you in, or that the music was pushing you away, or was there even that kind of effect at all, one way or another?
Yeah, it was. Music as a business was pushing me out, in a way, you know, saying like, okay, you've had your time. So when I was studying, it kind of came natural that me and the group, we weren't as popular anymore. So we weren't doing as many shows, and we weren't doing as big of shows. And it was okay, because, you know, we did some shows, but we didn't really do the tours. We did more like the weekend shows, and that way I could combine it with the studies. And then, of course, the last year, my last year of studying was more or less 2020, and we had no shows. So writing my essay, like the last semester, you know, I was just here in this house, more or less isolated. But I was writing, my essay was very connected to art. Like, I was talking about the, I don't know if I'm just, I'm trying to translate here, so maybe it comes out wrong, but the juridification, or the, like, the, yeah.
That sounds like a word.
Yeah, yeah. In Swedish we say juridifiering. And so when you put something in a legal context, so the juridification of art.
Okay, yeah.
And I had two examples. I had one example was a Swedish artist called Frey Larsson. He put out a rap song that he got charged with threatening of an officer for that song.
Okay.
And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and he got freed in the first court, and he got convicted in the second one, actually, and then in the Supreme Court they freed him again. And when I wrote my essay, the case was only after the second court, so I hadn't seen the Supreme Court ruling yet. So that was one of my examples. And the other example was connected to graffiti. It wasn't really classic graffiti. It was more of she's an artist and a video producer, video director. She's done some hip-hop videos, and her name is Saga Berlin, a Swedish director. She's connected to some graffiti writers, and well, actually her husband or boyfriend is he has Finnish roots.
Okay.
And he's also, I'm sure that's the link also to graffiti, because he's from an old rap group called Fjärde Världen, the fourth world. Yeah.
Yes, I do remember them very well.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the guys from there, his name is Tom Piha, I think. He also made a solo career after Fjärde Världen, where he was doing more like grime stuff. really, really cool artist. And I mean, not to take anything away from her, she's an artist in her own right. I don't even have to mention him, but I just thought about it because of the Finland connection.
Yeah.
And they, what they did was they covered an empty pool with full of just big tags, really. Very, very stylish tags. But and then their idea was to repaint the pool again after that. She was inspired by the mandala, like how you create something and then you just make it disappear. But they were caught before they had time to paint over it. And she said, well, I'm gonna repaint this. No, you can't do that, because that would be committing the same crime again, because you don't have the permission to paint over it. So
paint or repaint.
Yeah. So it's two very interesting cases in how when art gets like into this narrow and square shape of the law, what happens with art. So in the music case, shortly what happened was they didn't understand it. So they thought he was saying something that he didn't say. So for me as another rapper, it was easy to hear what he was talking about. For me, it's obvious that he's talking about how him and the group that he identifies with are getting quote unquote shot by police or something for doing semi-criminal stuff, or just for having a, as he says in the chorus, for having plants in the shower, for example.
Yeah.
So my conclusion is that, okay, what happens when you try to put art in the legal context? The legal context doesn't understand it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the knowledge, and it doesn't have the interest or the words for it. And the same with the graffiti thing. She was inspired by the mandala. But the law doesn't recognize the mandala. The law is just, well, it's damage. You damaged that pool. And that's the end of the story.
There are no nuances.
I remember back in the days, you and the Loop Group, I think you kind of landed in a little bit in the hot water when you were making a song also about Olof Palme. I remember that was, I don't know if this was a legal trouble or was it just the press or other things, but that was certainly a situation where you were kind of, I suppose, very misunderstood, Olof Palme being the Swedish prime minister who was murdered.
Yeah.
86, I want to say, but I might be wrong.
No, it was 86. Just a second. Yeah, it was 86. I was born 76, so in the song I say something about being 10 years old, lonely, madman, because they were either focusing on the lonely mad person or the kind of conspiracy theories. They had different kinds, and also they were thinking one of the first police chiefs, because a lot of police went through there and weren't successful. One of the first ones, he focused a lot on the PKK, like the Kurds, thinking that they had something to do with it. But about your question, or I don't know if it was a question, but we never got into a legal thing about that song. It was more some kind of self-censoring by the public Swedish radio, because they got a lot of complaints about it, so they stopped playing it. But that was it, and that's something that happens sometimes with some songs. We made another song called Ring Snuten, Call the Police, and that one was also more or less removed from the playlists, because it was, yeah, people were complaining, and it was, I mean, it doesn't even fit with the kind of music that they play. But back then they played a little more alternative stuff, so sometimes those songs would come up, and a lot of people would be upset about it, because in Ring Snuten, one of the rappers, he is referring to one of the very infamous cop killings in Sweden. Yeah, people got offended.
People do get offended. That happens sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the time, go on.
Too much talk maybe about the Palme song, but what I think we were trying to do with that song was to process a national trauma, which the killing of the prime minister really was, because Sweden was, and still is maybe, but certainly in the 80s was a very naive country about, stuff like that couldn't happen in Sweden. Like, prime minister couldn't get killed in Sweden. And it was a really rude awakening when that happened. And I mean, like I said, I was 10 years old, so I didn't really understand, but it was still a trauma that also affected us as kids. And then when we got a little older, we were trying to process it in the music by maybe trying to not laugh at it, but trying to at least find some kind of humor in it to maybe cope with it. And of course, as really young artists, maybe we didn't really succeed, but that was, I think, what we were aiming for. And a lot of, maybe most people didn't really hear that.
That can happen very easily. And also, it was even like growing up in the neighboring country, it was something that I guess it was more about the police being unable to find any really solution to the thing.
Yeah.
And then you guys came out and said that, well, it was us, we did it.
Yeah.
In the song.
And I mean one of the reasons why the police can't find the killers is maybe because the killers could be connected to the police. So there is one of the theories is that police did it, that it was a like inside job. And I mean, some strong evidence point that way, but it's a tough nut to crack. Maybe years later, when everybody involved is dead, maybe you can find some text saying like, okay, this is what happened. Or maybe not, because it could be, I don't know, it could be really still really sensitive.
Absolutely. Now we got into talk about the theories of Olof Palme's murder, the Swedish prime minister. That's but it's an interesting topic. But how is you say that you still sometimes occasionally write music. Is that just an inspiration that comes that needs to get out of your chest, and how does that work?
No, it's more like when somebody else asks me to get on a track or. Either as just a guest, one verse, maybe a chorus, or it could be a producer saying, oh, we should do this. So what I've mostly done earlier in my career is to really push my own projects and without making the beats, still more or less produce a lot of the albums. So this is probably what I haven't been doing lately. Like, okay, I want to make an album. I want to make all these songs and put them together. That's too big for me right now. So, but to write a verse or write a song when I get inspired or when I hear a beat, or that's still possible in this situation that I'm in. So
you haven't left the hip-hop world or the hip-hop scene? Your relationship to hip-hop hasn't changed or hasn't ended? It may have transformed.
Yeah, it hasn't ended, but it has transformed, and in some ways I'm not as attached to the Swedish hip-hop scene as I used to be, and that's also because the scene has moved very quickly into another direction. And in that kind of scene, I'm not relevant at the moment. Or, I mean, I could be and I should be, but it's just not like that. And it's kind of hard to try to find that role where you can be maybe an inspiration or maybe a different kind of voice. But I don't know. It seems like there's a thirst for something else at this time in Swedish hip hop. So
yeah. And about the rest of the band, Loop Troop, what of them? What happened? You said towards 2016, your guys' popularity somewhat was petering out, it seemed, or it wasn't as much as it used to be. What has happened to the rest of the guys?
Supreme is a tattoo artist. So he's in Malmö doing really nice, nice stuff. I don't have tattoos myself, but if I would get tattoos, I would get it from him, because his style is the way he makes portraits. I really like that.
It's a kind of like some kind of a cartoon style. I've seen them from Instagram. It's a very
similar to that. Did he do that?
No. We have those pictures on the wall, but they are from the vinyl. They're from the inside sleeve of the vinyl.
Which vinyl?
Right now, Naked Sweet. They are like
He did them. Yeah, he did.
Oh, he did them.
He
okay.
Them.
Okay. Well, he did them, but that's not quite the style that the tattoos.
No, but I was asking if he did that work, because as you were describing his work and his aesthetic, I thought that sounds similar to what I've seen here in the house.
Yeah, but it is, because he does have the cartoon style, but he also has the very realistic portrait style. So he does a lot of tattoos like the Naked Swedes faces there. So he's in Malmö doing that, and I'm working in Malmö as well, so I see him sometimes. You know, he's swooshing by in his bike. He's really a family guy. And the other two guys, Tommy Cosmic, he's still living in Västerås. And Magnus MB, he lives in Stockholm. And they actually work with the same thing at the moment, although they have different roles. They work with a new app, but it's more than an app. It's a service or something called Tracklib. And their idea is that musicians or composers, people with musical rights, they can link to Tracklib. So they can say, okay, I want these songs or my whole catalog to be able to be sampled. And the lib in Tracklib is probably library. So it's they trying to build a library with songs that can be used to sample. And then on the other side, you have the people who want to sample. So they go into Tracklib and see what songs are there. And they say, okay, I want to sample this. And there's already a deal. If you want to sample that, well, the deal is this. And so they can have different price levels. So the composer get paid and the people can sample with no problems with the law. So it's a really, really interesting service, I think. And I think MB's role is to find the composers. So he's like in contact with a lot of artists and composers to get them interested in signing up their catalogs. And I think Cosmic's work is more like building the website, building the
app.
Yeah.
That's something that Loop Troop has always been. I think that's been one of your strengths, that you guys having like very different, like you cover many different aspects, and you've been writing graffiti as well. Mm. And then, you know, there's been like the musical side, there's the art. All of these different things are sort of coming together there. Mm-hmm. So it kind of is not surprising in some ways to hear that everybody have found also this kind of other things that somehow still relating to the original.
Yeah, because Supreme he was in art school back in like I want to say like 97 or 98. I'm not sure what year. Around there somewhere, maybe later, maybe 99. And I remember he was, and he's talked about this later on, like he was gonna go all out on the art side. Mm. And then we were just, you know, starting out we had been doing stuff for about 5 years, but we were getting really serious. Like we were gonna release our first album in 2000. We started our company in 98, and we had been releasing records even before that, but that's when we kind of made it official. And he was like, okay, so let me take a break from this art thing and see what this music thing leads to. And then more than, I don't know, 25 years later or 20, he's back with more like art stuff. And so it's...
Well, he certainly got to see what the music had in store.
Yeah.
After a 25-year break.
Yesterday, as we are recording this now, I'm not quite sure how we're going to be putting this out, but yesterday when we were... We were doing another interview. We were talking to Kamau, who is from Brazil, and I was actually yesterday wearing a Loop Troop t-shirt, and he was making a comment about that, and I said that, well, we're going to actually be talking to Promo, but
yeah. What was his name?
Kamau. He's quite a big name there, and also another thing about it is that oftentimes there's many circles in various countries when something like Long Arm of the Law starts playing, you know, yeah. One of the... Maybe the most famous song in many ways, and recognizable in many ways. People are like really getting into it, and you guys were always had the international outlook. You were just saying how you're not necessarily that connected to the Swedish scene, and of course you had like your circles in the Swedish scene, but you always seemed like the kind of like the odd one out in the Swedish scene. You were doing music in English for the most part, and then you had outlook to the world. How has that shaped you as an artist, that international reach?
Yeah, it's a big question. I'm gonna get a glass of water for that.
yeah.
And ponder that. It's true, because even the first time I saw a Loop Troop label was at Bush Radio on a fridge or some notice
in
board.
In Cape Town, South Africa, in the, like somewhere, I think in a fridge door,
yes.
In the kitchen, there was a Loop Troop
sticker.
Sticker. Yeah.
Yes, a Loop Troop sticker. The first time I saw a Loop Troop sticker was in South Africa, Cape Town, at a radio station there. And then at the time, I actually didn't know who Loop Troop was. And then after that, I became privy to you guys.
Yeah, let's start there. South Africa was one of our, it's one of my most memorable trips, actually. And it's very connected to what you were asking right now, because I remember coming there. We came there in 2002, I think, or maybe three. So it was just about when we were releasing The Struggle Continues. So we were playing those songs, and the tour was so great and so crazy, because like it was a friend of ours. She was doing this kind of strange education. It's not strange, but it's a bit different kind of education. They call it the Chaos Pilots, but it's in Denmark. So yeah, Kaos Pilote. So I guess. I don't know, but I guess you just learn to do something in chaos. And this was really what was happening in this tour, because so it was Loop Troop minus MB, because he didn't want to go to South Africa. I think he was a bit scared. And there was Spot Runners, and it was Timbuktu, and it was Chords, and it was DJ Amato. DJ Amato was Timbuk's DJ back then. So a lot of crazy guys, like I don't know what we were, like 26, around that age, so not very responsible.
Wise.
Not very wise, not very responsible, but very like a lot of energy. And what was connected to your question there was that we had always felt like our political stuff didn't really work in Sweden, because people were like, what are you complaining about? And why are you talking about this? It's not...
The context was different.
It's like it doesn't... they felt like it wasn't about the Swedish situation. But when we played the songs in South Africa, the reaction was different. It was more like...
Because of the political climate there.
So they really... it was the opposite reaction. Like, we love the political stuff. And
yes, it resonates.
Yeah.
It resonates.
And it was one of the first times I felt that. So it was really inspiring because, you know, to go so far away from home and then feel like, okay, we're getting more recognized for what we're doing here than how we're getting recognized at home. It was a great feeling and kind of strange, but really nice. We did a show we did different shows in Durban, Cape Town, and Johannesburg.
Johannesburg.
Yeah, and the idea was to do it in different areas around the cities and also inside the city center. Mm. So my experience was that it was the cities were very segregated still.
They were, yes.
And so we played in like for maybe strictly black and then more like colored and
right.
then. And in the city centers, it could be more like mixed and with tourists and everybody. Yes. So,
yes. But I'm not surprised that South Africans would respond that way to your content, to your material, because during apartheid times, music and musicians, artists became activists in South Africa. They were the people who were pushing the struggle forward for liberation. Yes. So they would definitely recognize kindred spirits from anywhere in the world who were also using music. And hip hop definitely is like the strongest art form musically speaking to raise awareness or consciousness or to create change. So I'm not surprised at all.
And imagine then, because in South Africa the struggle is called struggle, like the fight against apartheid was called struggle. So when you say the struggle continues, that's the album that you are touring there. There are a lot of people who are going to very literally feel that the struggle continues. They feel like there are new problems. Of course, it's not as bad as it was, but it's also there's still some room for improvement.
Yeah, and we've got struggle heroes. Nelson Mandela was a struggle hero. Many of our greats were struggle heroes. Steve Biko. So for us, the word struggle is real.
Yeah.
it means our struggle. In Xhosa, they call it umzabalazo. It's just basically what we all grew up knowing, that we are in a struggle during the 80s. So, of course, you would definitely be a hit.
Yeah, and I don't know how much we knew at the time, because now when I talk about it, I'm not surprised either. But
exactly. Maybe
I was still when it happened. You know, even though I, of course, understood that the political struggle had been going on for so long, I didn't know that would mean that we would be like so well received anyway, because we were kind of, especially at that time, it was like, okay, people want more, people want to hear something else. But then when we came there, they wanted to hear exactly that. And it made us, I think that also made us feel like, okay, so we should continue doing what we've been doing, because there are people in different kinds, in different parts of the world that like this. And that's what we noticed. Like, okay, we could go almost anywhere. We could go to a lot of different places and maybe not draw huge crowds, but crowds that were really into it. So you could get a really good connection. And so that's one way of answering that question. A different way is to also talk about the beef that Loop Troop had with the Stockholm hip-hop scene. It kind of formed the Swedish scene for a long time. I don't think it has any effect any longer, but it did have back then, because we were kind of representing the rest of Sweden, and Stockholm was like, thinking it was all about them. And so we were like, okay, yeah, yeah, you can keep. I even say that in one of the songs on Modern Day City Symphony. I'm saying something like, keep Stockholm. We're gonna conquer the world. And we were really about that, you know, going to South Africa, going to Japan, going to Australia, like real faraway places from where we were. So that was our focus, and kind of maybe we were shaped also by the fact that we were odd. We weren't really accepted where we were. I mean, they loved us in our hometown always, but just coming to Stockholm, that didn't really work. And then we were like, okay, so let's, because early on we started doing stuff in Denmark, we started doing stuff in Germany, so, and then just further and further away, and we got kind of addicted to traveling and to conquering new places.
Yes.
Well, I think last time that we saw you guys play live, of course, this is already a couple of years ago, but you haven't really been so active recently. It was in the city center of Helsinki, a lovely summer day. There was a festival and you were like the main act of the festival. And there were like, I don't remember how many, but there were some tens of thousands of people there outside in the city center listening to you. To your music, of course, it was part of festival, but that was
the World Village.
Yeah,
festival.
Yeah, but it was really like it was quite a moment. It felt like quite a moment because it was like there's this music that, you know, I have kind of my adult age. I've been, you know, growing adult with this music, and it's been following me when I've been around the world in different places. I bought Struggle Continues, I think, in Ireland. When I was in Ireland, I got it, bought it from a record shop in Ireland when I was living there, and so on and so forth. So it's like it all of a sudden came together in our hometown, which is now a hometown. So
yeah, I remember that show. It was beautiful.
How, and not to get too much into the sort of negative side of things, but about that beef that the Stockholm artist then had, was that ever resolved? Like, do you ever bump into them? Do you ever see them? I mean, I have heard the song that they made. They don't seem very committed to the whole. I think that half of those people were just there because they were asked to be or whatever they felt that it was. But is there like, was that situation ever addressed in any way?
It was in, like you said, a lot of different people were on that song. So it was resolved and addressed with some of them. I mean, one famous moment was when we recorded Top Dogs with Petter.
Yeah.
So that one, that started with him explaining like, oh, I didn't know what the song was about. I just recorded my verse. And in his case, it could be true because like his words are not really about us. So he could maybe just have been put in there. And also he could have known as well, because, you know, I don't know. And it doesn't really matter either. What happened was that we were like, yeah, okay, fuck it. Let's just make a song. And we were out in the southern parts of Stockholm then. We had played at some small jam, and it was like the home of Latin Kings.
Oh, yeah, okay. Legendary. One of the original Swedish hip hop, especially in Swedish.
Yeah, yeah. So Latin Kings, Petter, and Loop Troop are kind of like big names in Swedish hip hop for different scenes in Swedish hip hop. So when we came together to do that, it was maybe more legendary than we thought at the time, because at the time it was more like, yeah, just let's get in the studio, drink some beers, and record. And we made Top Dogs, and so Salla from Latin Kings, he produced the beat, and which is the same song that got really huge again now, like a year ago or something, a couple of years ago.
Why? What happened to that?
No, not that song, but the same sample.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think the original song is called Slave Song or something, and with I don't remember the artist name, but it's one of the new big ones. He sampled the same thing, with the flute there in the beginning.
Yeah. How is it like when you? I mean, you've been doing this for over 25 years. That's quite a significant amount of life experience. How have you changed? How have you changed from the young promo who were doing those earlier things to the person that you are now?
I think I've become more calm and more humble. I used to be very sure of things and be like, okay, it's this way or no way. It's like everything is black and white. Everything is very clear and easy, and I'm always right and that kind of stuff. So,
I know the feeling.
Yeah, but with a lot of losses and also a lot of wins, you know, I feel like I don't know much really. I mean, in a way, I know much, but I'm not sure of it the same way as I used to be. So
yeah,
and it's one of those
age it's
one of those cliches where you say that the more you know, the more you know that you don't know, like more you realize how much there is that you don't know. But when you are you know, both sides of 20, whatever, that kind of thing, you really feel like the world is yours. And maybe that's the way that it's supposed to be a little bit. Maybe that's a good to go through that.
Yeah I mean, a lot of the things that we recorded back then, like, has a lot of charm. I mean, I wouldn't think the same way anymore, but I'm still happy that we did it, you know. And because when you get this mind state that I'm in now, it's like maybe I wouldn't have put out all those records. Maybe I would have been like, nah, somebody else needs some time in the spotlight now. But at that time it was like, no, it's all about me. It's all about me. And you know,
that's youth. That's the beauty of being young.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not for me now, but I'm happy that I was like that then, because otherwise we wouldn't have made a testament. So
exactly. And do you guys see a future of ever? I'm sure you haven't disbanded, but each one is pursuing something. But essentially, are you still together, a group? You are still active artists.
We're not really active, but we will always come together and do stuff. We're planning on doing some stuff this summer. Actually, The Struggle Continues is 20 years, celebrating 20 years this year. So I think we're going to do some Struggle Continues celebrations. So it's funny, when you put out so many records around this time, you know, we have a celebration every year, more or less.
Yeah, every other year is 20 years of something. then you start getting 25 and
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah. You last doing... year was 20 years for Government Music. The year before was 20 years for Modern Day City Symphony, and it just goes on because we more or less released a new album every year. So
yeah. Do you know how many albums you've done, either as a solo artist, either in Swedish or English, or then or as part of Loop Troop, like your solo and Loop Troop? How many albums is that altogether? Do you know?
I've counted it a lot of times. I don't have the number, but I mean, it's easy to go through. Like Modern Day, Government Music, Struggle Continues, and then The Long Distance Runner, Fort Europa, White Man's Burden. So it was like one Loop Troop,
like one
promo.
One or the other, yeah.
And then I think it was two Loop Troop after that. It was, no, actually, then came my Swedish Kråksången, and also Good Things with Loop Troop around the same time. And with Kråksången, I released Standard Bearer, which is more like, I don't know if it's counted, but... Yeah.
It's a documentary.
Yes, I remember. Yeah, it. Yeah. I remember. It.
Yeah.
And after, so I'm up to like with maybe the Bondfångeri mixtape, so it's like 10. So that's to 2008 or 9. And then we have Professional Dreamers.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so funny because with all these albums, I remember where we've been. Like,
I know. These when you said long distance runner, I remember yeah. which time of our life yeah. that was.
And then Professional Dreamers, we moved back yes. to Finland. And yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, so I'm up to 11. And then we have Mitt Hjärta and Bomb, the Swedish Loop Troop album. Naked Swedes, of course. But I'm feeling like maybe it was some more promo. I released promo albums now, like the one in Swedish and the one in English in 2020. And forgot the titles already. So I'm
so much.
Yeah. I think between 15 or 20.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good going. I think you are allowed to have a little bit of a break and do some legal things.
Yeah.
Law stuff, you know.
This need to give the spotlight to someone else for a while.
Yeah, you're on a different kind of an arena now, different kind of stage with different kind of results.
Yeah, and I'm so much in the beginning, so I that's also kind of a transition to go from being, I mean, not the greatest or anything, but an artist who's like, okay, this is how I want it to be done. You know, it's on my terms in a lot of ways. And now I'm on a new arena and I'm like starting out. So I have a boss and I'm like, I never had a boss before. And it's kind of strange. It was like, we actually went on a trip to Stockholm to meet up with the rest of the offices because the law firm has offices in different cities. And it was something about the trip, and I was like, why didn't I get the train information, like the trip about the trip? And you know, I was thinking about like it was a tour of mine.
Tour, yeah.
And then I was like, okay, maybe I should chill, because you know, I'm not the center of attention here. So so yeah, it's a good experience.
It's a paradigm shift.
Yeah,
it requires it.
But it is something. It is. I mean, I admire it a lot. When you are, you know, whatever you are, in your 30s or in your 40s, and then you kind of like you get back into that role of being a beginner and starting somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's really also takes a quite a lot of courage to go there, especially for somebody like you who were on a, you know,
at the top
regard.
Of his game.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
It's quite inspiring.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's been a nice experience, both to study, to learn something new, and but also like to start this new job. It's been really, 'cause I have really nice colleagues. They help out and support, and you know, come with, 'cause they have knowledge and they, you know, say, oh, okay, I'm going to help you out here. And it's a lot of, yeah.
One of the questions that I still wanted to ask before we sort of wrap things up, I think that you were, like we're saying, you were internationally minded, you were traveling, you were touring. I don't know if you ever had to sort of like go on a holiday abroad because you were going to work abroad many the times. Now that you're doing this, is your current job, is it something that, well, it of course the legal systems are slightly different and it doesn't necessarily translate in the same way, but are you now then more in Sweden and then, you know, you will, Corona permitting, you can go and have a holiday somewhere, but how does that feel, to sort of like, I don't know if it's settling down, but nevertheless there's like a little bit of a different approach to it, I guess.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that in different ways, like Corona has been bad, but it's also been a way of discovering how the nearer places also can be nice to go to. I mean, I love swimming, or not necessarily swimming like that, but just going in the lake or in the ocean. So I've been doing it all through the winter and in the summer as well. When I'm driving across Sweden, I'm just stopping at any lake and like I have to try this one. This is a new lake. I've never seen this, or a new river or something. So I don't really right now feel the urge of traveling. I mean, it hits me sometimes because it's been dark and cold for a long time. But I don't know, Corona combined with just the whole climate thing makes me not really think too much about traveling. But of course, I would love to if it's, you know, if hopefully we can find better ways of traveling. I've been thinking a lot about going with the bike all the way to maybe, I don't know, to Asia somewhere.
Okay, that's. I thought that you were going to say something a lot closer.
I've been thinking about Berlin as well, you know. I don't know if it's going to happen now, because now I feel like you said, I'm more like bound to Sweden in a way. At least for, because right now I haven't really found the balance yet where I can balance work with free time. I'm just constantly thinking about work, and I think after a while it's gonna calm down a little. I'm gonna feel more in control, and I'm gonna be able to disconnect from it when I get home and stuff. Because right now, actually, when I forgot about our interview, I was about to starting to work again.
Oh, shame. Okay. Yeah. I can imagine. There's a lot of preparation.
Yeah.
It's been really great, Promo. It's been so good to see you after all these years. It doesn't seem like anything's changed. You look like you looked before. I think we probably also.
Yeah,
and
you
yet
too,
so yeah, much yeah. has changed, yeah. right?
It's really nice to see you guys again, yeah.
Only the whole world has changed.
Yeah.
But nothing else.
Thank you so much. This is really great.
Yeah, yes, thank you guys. Yes.
This has been Planet Earth Planet Rap Production, PEPR, the Virtual World Tour Conversation Series.
We are powered by rapstation.com and RSTV app, which you can find and download from www.rstvapp.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram as @PEPRRadio.